It's one of the longest running musicals in off-Broadway history. And apparently, it's also one of the most performed musicals in high schools. That show is Little Shop of Horrors, where down on his luck Seymour discovers a new species of plant that wants to destroy the world. The play opens this week at Actors Express, and we have director Rick Lombardo, along with actors Juan Carlos Unzeta and Kylie Brown in studio with us. Welcome to City Lights.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Hello.
So, this is one of the longest running musicals in off-Broadway history. What's the difference between Broadway, off-Broadway, and of course, there's also off-Broadway?
Well, usually it's sometimes just a matter of geography. Broadway is defined as a very specific neighborhood in Manhattan. The theaters tend to be very large, 1,000 seats or more. Off-Broadway developed as a place to do more interesting, adventuresome work that maybe wasn't quite so commercial, although Little Shop became very commercial.
Yeah.
Usually in neighborhoods outside of the Times Square area in smaller theaters. This show started at the WPA Theater and then went to the Orpheum Theater down on the Lower East Side, where it ran for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. I think it's the biggest box office success in off-Broadway history.
A cult favorite. When the show first debuted in 1982, why didn't it make a splash on Broadway? Or are there definite advantages to being off-Broadway rather than having to make it to Broadway?
I think back in the 80s, there were a lot of advantages to being off-Broadway, and one certainly was cost. You could keep the cost much lower for an off-Broadway show. You could develop a kind of cult following. You could keep the show running forever, and you only needed 400 or 500 people a night instead of 1,500 people a night. And I think also, the original creators, there's a kind of grunge built into the show that lends itself to being in a bit of a off the beaten path, away from the Great White Way.
That more allowed often, them, I mean, yeah. The stage equivalent of indie film.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Little Shop of Horrors finds young and naive Seymour, that would be you, Juan.
That's me.
Working in a flower shop when he discovers a new species of plant. Would you and Kylie, who plays Autry, would you talk about the storyline for us?
Sure. I think, Seymour, like you said, is down on his luck, and aside from having this giant crush on Audrey, his coworker and friend, he discovers this plant which starts to gain much interest in the neighborhood and brings in people from all around the area, and he gets that taste of celebrity, and all the while trying to figure out how to balance keeping the plant happy and trying to keep a normal life amidst all the crazy that's growing around him.
And Kylie, how does Audrey fit into all of this?
Audrey, the flower shop for Audrey, I feel like, is a respite. She is such a good-hearted person and has terrible, terrible self-esteem and self-worth. Is dating a psychopath. A dentist, and doesn't think that she is worthy of a sweet guy like Aww. Seymour.
Let's listen to a little bit of Suddenly Seymour.
Standing beside you, you don't need no makeup. Don't have to pretend. Suddenly Seymour is here to provide you sweet unknown. understanding. Seymour's your friend.
Nobody ever treated me kindly. Daddy left early. Mama was poor. I need a man and I follow him blindly.
So we're getting a feel for the innocence of this budding love, you should excuse the pun, a little bit of, that just came to me.
That's nice.
Thank you, Juan. Somewhere That's Green also is a love theme, and we're going to hear a little bit of Audrey's dreams here.
I know Seymour was the greatest, but I'm dating a semi-sadist. So I got a black eye and my arms in a cast. Still, that Seymour's the cutie. Well, if not, he's good in the beauty. And I dream of a place where we could be together at last.
And Audrey is dreaming about somewhere that's green beyond the floral shop. Rick, I can tell you're excited about listening to snippets from both those love themes.
I am, because I think they're two of the seminal songs in the Alan Menken, Howard Ashman canon. You know, their work has become known all over the world. Of course, Howard died very young. Unfortunately, we lost him to AIDS. But when they were working as a team, the work that they did for Disney, those melodies, that approach to lyric writing is something that is known now the world over.
Would you name some of those?
Well, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Little yes. Mermaid, you can go on and on. But I think these two songs for me, have a very special place, because I tend to believe that Suddenly Seymour is a melody that is sort of so seminal, Alan Menken, and you can hear threads of that through almost all of his work with Disney. And then for Howard Ashman, the lyric to Somewhere That's Green, I'm a lyricist myself, and it's one of those lyrics that I'm in awe of, because it just tells a story so perfectly and is at the same time so highly ironic and also so sentimental, and is able to do both things at the same time.
He did it all. If you're just joining us, this is City Lights. We'll hear more about Little Shop of Horrors at Actors Express after a short break. You're listening to WABE Atlanta.
Support for WABE comes from Actors Express, presenting Little Shop of Horrors. Seymour discovers a new species of plant and thinks his problems are solved. The catch is, the plant is a bloodthirsty carnivore bent on world domination. Through August 20th, ActorsExpress.com. And from Stitch Fix, a personal styling service for women and men. Clients get hand-picked clothing, accessories, and footwear delivered to their door. They keep what they like and send back the rest. You can learn more at StitchFix.com.
And we're back with City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thanks for listening. Our guests are director Rick Lombardo, along with actors Juan Carlos Unzueta and Kylie Brown. They're here to tell us about Little Shop of Horrors, the summer musical at Actors Express. So originally, Little Shop of Horrors was a 1960s horror film. Roger Corman, was it? And then it was adapted into the musical, we know, in the early 80s. Then that became a film. And it's had many runs off and on Broadway since its debut. Obviously, plenty of material for inspiration here. As actors, Kylie and Juan, do you reference any of these past productions?
I don't like to. I don't think anyone could be Ellen Green. And I've always wanted to play this part. And part of the fun is trying to do it your own way.
Ellen Green played Audrey in the debut, and she was also in the movie version. And in 2015, she did a two-night-only production with Jake Gyllenhaal of Little Shop. So her performance has been standard, and I think it's admirable that you want to respect hers and bring on your own. How would you describe the musical style of the score?
Well, it's really pastiche, isn't it? I mean, one of the things that's fun about it is that the musical style is all over the map. You can definitely hear the late 70s, early 80s in the kind of pop rock that's in the show. There's some of that. But then it brings in there's klezmer music. There's based in Yiddish themes when you think of Mushnick and Son.
And a little Latin.
There's Latin. There's calypso feel. So you could tell that, Alan, one of the things that he loves is to take lots of musical motifs and then reshape them and voice them in a slightly different way and then figure out how to make it perfect for the characters. It's like an Elvis-y kind of early 60s thing with the dentist that he's doing.
And I hear a little of Tommy from The Who.
Yeah.
Let's listen to what I think is a great example of summing up that eclectic style in Skid Row. That was Skid Row. Let's talk about Audrey 2. Now, Audrey 2 really takes center stage and ultimately
quite literally
takes all of the stage. Audrey 2 is the person-eating plant. How have you constructed your Audrey 2?
Well, there are some secrets about Audrey 2 that I'm gonna not be able to speak about because that's part of the fun. But there are some things that I can say. When I sat down with Freddie Ashley to start to talk about the show, I said, as you mentioned, high schools do it all the time. The music is so iconic. The movie is iconic. If we're gonna do it, let's take a different lens. Let's find a new way in. And as a director, I never really want to do what someone else has done before. Let's try to find a new way into the story. So one thing that I was really interested in exploring was what would happen to the kind of gender and sexual dynamics in the show if we had the alien plant voiced by a woman in this production rather than a man.
Yeah.
And I wasn't quite sure what that would do or whether it would work. And I said, but let's try it at auditions. Let's bring in both men and women at the audition and we'll try it. And we learned, when women were singing it, we need to change the key a little bit. But it was so brilliant and kind of sick in a wonderful way when some of the things that the plant says and sings are coming through a female voice than a male voice.
Okay.
And I thought let's go all in on this and see. And we went all in. So when you see the plant, you'll know what I mean.
Okay. Well, stay tuned, and we will have to see that in person. We have the voice of a very fine male singer in the clip we have from the movie version. Let's listen to a little bit of Feed Me Get It. No, I'm sorry. This is the new Broadway cast recording of Feed Me Get It. And you'll hear how traditionally the human eating plant is portrayed by a man.
Like a Cadillac car, or a gas shot on Jack Parr. How about a ding with a handlebar? You're gonna get it. To be a big wheel, dining out for every meal. I'm the plant who can make it all real. You're gonna get it.
You're gonna get it.
I'm your genie, I'm your friend, I'm your willing slave. Take a chance, just feed me. You know the kind of eats, the kind of red-eyed treats, the kind of sticky, licky sweets I crave. Come on, Seymour, don't be a putz. Trust me in your life, I'll surely rob a King Tut's.
Yes.
You didn't have nothing till you met me. Come on, kid, what'll it be? Money? Girls? One particular girl? How about that Audrey? Think it over. There must be someone you could 86 real quiet like and get me some lunch. How'd you like a room at the...
Okay, I have to tell you, come on, Seymour, don't be a putz. Feed me a lot of King Tut's. I mean, up there with Shakespeare. So we can look forward to something very different with Actors Express.
I think I can safely guarantee that the plant has never looked the way this plant looks in this production.
Which I think in the 1982 version was described as a cross between a giant avocado and a shark.
And a Venus flytrap.
And the Venus flytrap part, of course. One of the funniest takeaways from this show, because there are more than a few, is a villain that I think people of varying backgrounds, beliefs, politics would agree is the universal villain. Let's hear that song.
When I was younger, just a bad little kid, my mama noticed funny things I did, like shooting puppies with a BB gun. I'd poison guppies, and when I was done, I'd find a pussycat and bash in its head. That's when my mama said...
What did she say?
She said, my boy, I think someday you'll find a way to make your natural tendencies pay. You'll be a dentist. You have a talent for causing things pain. Okay. Son, be a dentist. People will pay you to be inhumane.
Okay, the ultimate villain is the dentist.
Yeah.
And you have a backstory, Rick.
Well, yeah, I don't know how deeply we want to go into psychology on this one.
Oh God.
But apparently Alan's dad was a dentist,
and Alan, the composer.
Alan Menken, and Alan himself at one point was pre-dental, is my understanding. So he was thinking about becoming a dentist as well. So I don't know if there's something Freudian going on with this.
We've got Shakespeare and Oedipus the King in Little Shop of Horrors. Of course, Seinfeld's anti-dentite also comes to mind. You know, Little Shop of Horrors seems like it could be pure camp, but then it has a very grim ending. What are the morals to this story, if there are any, in this immorality musical?
You know, if you wanted to look deeply, I mean, the show is very campy, but if you just camp it up, the show doesn't work. because also the show has a really deep heart, if you hear some of, especially some of the songs that we played earlier. So it's a very delicate balance of the camp and the parody and the shtick, and then the really true sweetness of the feelings of Audrey and Seymour and what they want in the world. And if you want to look for a deeper meaning, it's that, you know, the plant is very seductive and says, I will give you, it's very much like a genie, literally, yeah, like the genie.
Or Faust.
I'll give you your heart's desires if you only take these small steps towards the dark side. And sometimes it only takes a very small step toward the dark side before you find yourself very deep in the hole.
Or in the plant. One New York critic wrote, it's a show for horticulturists, horror cultists, sci-fi fans, and anyone with a taste for the outrageous. Rick Lombardo is the director of Little Shop of Horrors at Actors Express. Juan Carlos Unzueta plays Seymour, and Kylie Brown plays Sweet Audrey, not Audrey 2. Little Shop of Horrors opening night is July 15th. Previews begin tonight. The show runs through August 20th, Wednesday through Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday afternoons at 2. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.